There we go. John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show. Thanks, everybody, for being along for the ride. You write to us. That's good. Teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar who... Where is she, Jacob? Her little stool is empty. Where is she?
You know, I think some of her experiences with Sherry have made her less motivated to show up on time.
Oh, okay. It's my fault. It's my fault she has no time management.
Well, no, she also, I heard she she feels self-conscious about the mustache now, so.
Yeah, you wanted her to perm her mustache. Diving in the new, yeah!
Sorry, not sorry.
Now it's just come to the surface. It's so, it used to be subtle. There was this sort of underlying current of dislike that you had for her.
I think bigger than that,
Sherry. You're a full-grown woman with giant hands. She lives in a jar.
It's a two-way street, and she is equal in her disdain for me. Right.
All right.
Right.
Oh, she's back. Okay.
Yeah.
She's back. See? Okay. All right. Sunday night, there's a bar over in University near the UW. I don't think it's a bar because you don't. I think you can. You can be underage and be in there, right? Isn't it kind of a? It's like a.
I think it might be a restaurant that yeah you can, but that they they serve alcohol, so you can maybe be in there, but yeah, presumably they're still IDing people.
Flowers Bar and Restaurant.
Got it. So it's a place to kind of hang out. It's not just sort of typical University of Washington UW bar. And you get younger people in there and other folks in there. I was talking to a couple of cops that were on that call on that Sunday. So what happened was that these guys were not college students. It was kind of two gangbangers went out there, got into a fight, and then ended up shooting at one another. And then they hit four people or something. Bystanders were in the mix outside at 2 a.m. when the bar let out.
Yeah, it was actually four UW students.
Four injured, right?
Yeah, one of them is still in the hospital. He's in satisfactory condition. The other three were treated and released. But, yeah, this looks like it was collateral damage. There was a fight that went on. Shots were fired. They got shot as a result. They were not involved in the altercation.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's the same most of the time. And it's the weirdest part of the stories that they cover. It's gun violence, gun violence, gun violence. It's a very small section of the community shooting and killing one another. In most cases, the shooter is black. In most cases, the victim is black. That's the case. You know, I'm assuming a lot of times these cases are not solved because nobody wants to talk to the police because you don't want to rat somebody out because the word gets back that you ratted somebody out. Next thing you know, you're going to get shot.
Yeah, so snitches get stitches.
There you go. Thank you, Sherry. So, yeah, that's what you get. So this idea of like it's you know, rampant and we got to do something about the guns. And if we do something about the guns, then we're going to solve this problem. It's not about the guns. It's a very small group of people in the community that are the ones shooting and then same being shot. So you think like if you had like, I don't know, 300 and some shootings or something, and I don't know how many deaths they've had in Seattle. If it was a white guy shooting a black guy, it'd be a totally different thing. It wouldn't be about gun violence. It would be about hate crimes. It would be about racism and all this other stuff. But when you change the color of the shooter and they change the color of the victim, and just make them both black, then no one talks about any of that. There's a group, and I support this group. I'd seen them speak at an event in New York a couple of years ago, and it was Mothers Against Gun Violence. Voices of Black Mothers. There was a woman that was speaking, older woman, Sylvia something or other. She's in her 70s. She's part of the Woodson Foundation. And she was talking about how people just do nothing. So politicians use their children, their dead children, and activists use their dead children, and nobody cares about their kids. And it's never the issue of what's happening in the community. So these moms that are Voices of Black Mothers United, they said it can't come from outside. It has to come from inside the neighborhood. And it's about working with police, about working with Boys and Girls Clubs. It's about working with intervention teachers, about parents being involved. It has to be solved. Their whole thing is has to be solved from within the community. It's not some outside thing that's going to solve this, because it's their kid, their 15-year-old, shooting someone else's mom's 17-year-old, and they're on the same block or separated by a couple of streets. That's the story. But you look at the Seattle Times, it's this whole idea that we don't know how to get a hold of it. We don't know how to solve it. You get Dal Constantine's going to spend $1 million or $2 million or whatever. This, we get to do all this gun violence. It's, these moms are really trying to make some sort of headway on this thing. It's, they're all across the United States. They're in Virginia, Maryland, the, Baltimore, New York. They're in California. And it's a small group of moms that have all known in the heartache. The woman told the story about arriving just in time to watch her son take her last breath there on the ground, you know, just covered in blood. And remove social economics, remove color, remove everything. But just think of it, that's your kid. That's your baby, right? That, and being held back by the police. Like the mom talked about trying to throw herself on top of her son to try to help somehow, to hug him one more time or feel his, feel the warmth that was still in his body, before, and he'd already passed. I mean, it's heartbreaking, heartbreaking. And no one knows their names. Nobody cares, because they weren't killed by the person, that can be exploited, right? It's not a cop. It's not a white guy. It's just someone else that this kid knew or might not have known or had some beef against. It's just tragic. And these moms are all just silent victims of this whole thing.
And the ages of these kids is what is really shocking. I mean, some of them are 14, 13 years old. I mean, and they're, the fact that they're carrying guns in the first place is shocking and terrible. But that they're killing each other at such a high rate is really, you know, it's, it, it,
I don't,
it's,
let me just tell you something. If I were a kid living in a situation where this shootings are occurring and I was 14 years old, I'm sorry, I would carry a gun. That sounds horrible, but you're going to run into somebody who has one, and you, it's, there's, what town was that? Was that, oh, it was in Memphis, right? Scrawled across this, wall, this, and it's been there for about 15 years, kill or be killed. Somebody had put this graffiti on this wall 15 years ago, and still the crime and still the shooting, and it's still happening over and over and over again. But if I were a kid and I were living in one of those neighborhoods, I don't know, you just think to yourself, if you don't have a gun?
I think that's a lot of demented, right? I mean, you have to for protection, but I think most of these kids join gangs for protection, right? I mean, if you're out there and, you know, the neighborhood has rival gangs and you're not part of it, there's going to be a lot of recruitment to try to get you into a gang. And then you're going to have to do an initiation. And that means you're going to have to prove yourself to the gang. And then once you cross over that threshold into whatever that is, there's no turning back. There's no, and there's no real shame in going to prison, because a lot of these gangs that are on the street are run by people in prison. And some gangs, it's a requirement. It's like part of your, you know, prerequisite to get into a gang. You have to have been in prison. So that's not really a deterrent. It's like, uh-oh, what if I get caught? I'll go to prison. That's okay. So the whole system, I mean, it's a, you know, a very, very, you know, the whole thing is so upsetting because there's no way to unravel it or start to fix it. How do you do it? I mean, you have these kids, some of these kids come from homes where they have no supervision. They don't have enough to eat. So they join a gang because it's their family. I mean, that's common knowledge. That's how they do it. But it's, you know, so the UW president put out a statement. And what she said was that gun violence is a public health crisis, and that she's working, the university is working with the city of Seattle and the Seattle Police Department to address root causes behind the increase in personal and property crime in the university district. Now, how are they doing that? How do they deal with the root causes? Are they going to go single-handedly and help with poverty and drug addiction and unemployment and all of
and
that?
Broken families and,
right.
and crappy schools. Here's one for you. A study that was done, Harvard did this study, and what they found was where they had school choice. So they looked at the numbers prior to school choice in North Carolina, and they found prior to the school choice coming in place, once school choice was in place, then they started looking at the numbers. If you have a school choice and the parent could send their kid wherever school they wanted to go to, teen pregnancy in the black community dropped 10%. Children, they really are kids, and up to the age of 18 years old, going to prison dropped by 5%. And they said these numbers will continue to improve as parents are able to send their kids to a school. So then all of a sudden the kid has a better education. That school choice was done in North Carolina, the study that was done by Harvard and two other organizations looked at those numbers as well to see. So you would say to somebody like Dale Constantine, I have an idea. Rather than spending another $2 million on some sort of project or whatever to look at, you know, public health of this gun violence or taking the guns off the streets, would you want to support a movement that has been proven to work, which is you say to that parent, you could send your kid to a better school so that all of a sudden your kid starts to see that there's a future and they start to get grades and they start to find that somebody cares about them and they're in a better, more productive environment that they're spending their days in. Would, if you knew that those numbers would reduce teen pregnancy, if you knew those numbers would reduce kids going to prison, if you knew it would reduce gangs and gang shooting, would you support school choice? And the answer is absolutely no way. No way would they do that. No. They would stop that in an instant. Even if you said, these are pretty good numbers. Now, what are your numbers? You're going to spend $2 million. Are you going to start to see these numbers go down? Why not try that? Why not see if school choice and allowing a voucher program so that a mom and a dad or just a mom can send their kid to the school that they want to go to if you knew those numbers were effective? But they can't do that because no way they would. This teachers union would stop them and Dow wouldn't get any money and Bob Ferguson wouldn't get any money and Jay Inslee wouldn't get any money. It's a really interesting study. And a couple of different groups that looked at it said, you know, they went in there thinking, oh, come on, who's funding this thing? They said, it's legit. It's legit. Kid has a future, maybe has a better place to be rather than joining a gang. Maybe they could start to do something. But the idea that this is a public health crisis, Reason looked into it when was it the CDC that said that this is a public health crisis? They started looking into these numbers and the study that was out
gun
there.
Gun violence in America is a public health emergency.
Gun violence is a public health issue.
We need to start thinking of this as a public health crisis.
Republican Congressman Jay Dickey is infamous for a 1996 law prohibiting the CDC from using federal funds to advocate for gun control.
The Dickey Amendment.
The so-called Dickey Amendment.
Remember the Dickey Amendment? Which has effectively kept the CDC from studying gun violence.
What inspired the Dickey Amendment was a blockbuster 1993 CDC-funded study, which claimed to show that owning guns made Americans overwhelmingly less safe.
Having a gun in your home not only doesn't protect you, but it puts your family at risk.
According to a recent film published by the New York Times, the NRA lobbied for the Dickey Amendment because the 1993 study made an overwhelming case against gun ownership, and it wanted to stop the CDC from ever backing studies of this sort again.
And the NRA didn't think that that would be good for business, and this really spurred them on to attack us with much greater fury.
The problem with this story is that the 1993 study doesn't actually show what its proponents claim. It had serious statistical problems that stem from its approach to the topic of gun violence, underscoring why the Dickey Amendment was good policy. A public health agency isn't well suited to analyzing social science issues of this sort.
So they went ahead and they looked at the study and they found out that it was flawed in just every which way imaginable, that the numbers didn't add up and what they were taken from it. And then the CDC saying it's a public health thing, that if you have a gun in the house, you're 10 times more likely or 5 times more likely. The numbers were all manipulated in a way, and they simply said it doesn't hold water. I don't know if is the next cut way too long, Jacob. This one, no, this isn't bad. Here's how they were able to sort of fudge those numbers.
Brown points out that unlike with death from disease, when a gun kills someone in a home, the surrounding circumstances are highly relevant.
The researchers count all deaths equal, whether the homeowner or her family,
or a homicidal home invader. Someone not blinded by disease control thinking would focus on how these guns were used for self-defense, suicide, accidental injury, domestic violence, or seized by an attacker and used against the owner. This could be useful information for someone weighing the benefits and risks of keeping a gun in the house.
A major flaw in the study is that it attributes homicides to the presence of guns in the home, even if a gun wasn't involved.
In fact, the majority of the homicides don't have a gun at all. And if a gun was involved, the researchers don't bother to ask if it was the homeowner's gun.
Okay, so listen, like you point out, the president of UW saying that they're going to do everything they can to support more research, looking into solving this public health problem.
I mean, when they talk about root causes, those root causes are so deep and so historically problematic. There's nothing that one organization can do. There's nothing that one, person can do. It takes, so much effort to be able to even identify each thing and then go for it. This particular study, though, John, the reason that just to show you how flawed it was, the CDC study, they said the risk was 200% greater that you would be killed if you had a gun in the house. And mm-hmm. you're 400% more likely to kill yourself if there's a gun in the house. And when they drilled down for all the, the statistics and everything, they found that that's more like 25%.
Yeah. Listen, people want to be able to use those numbers any way they possibly can. So it's tragic. It's just going to keep going. And the fact that fentanyl is cheap to buy, easy to distribute, and so many people on the streets of Seattle. We've created a marketplace where we don't enforce that law. So you have people coming in from other states because you know that you can get drugs here. You know you won't be hassled. You know they're cheap. You know where to buy them. You can have a completely degenerate lifestyle where you just live however you want to live, get as high as you want to get high, and just and then occasionally someone's going to shoot somebody, but the distributors are in intact. The business is supported by the fact that it's in not being broken up by the police because the police realize, I'm not going to get in there and try to stop it. So you have customers buying the drugs. You have the salesman selling the drugs. You have no one interrupting the sale. And over and over and over and over again, you've got overdoses on the streets and you have shootings going on as well. It's happening in Portland and it's happening in Seattle. It's happening in San Francisco, where we have decided we're going to decriminalize drugs. Well, if you decriminalize drugs, you get all the other stuff that goes with it. So that's what you've got. And it's not a public health problem that needs to be looked into. It's not about guns. Oh, God. It's just it's tragic. It's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get one of these women on there from that group, the Voices of Mothers United, Black mm-hmm. Mothers United. God, it was powerful. Oh, my God. Nobody could speak. When the woman finished her talk, you ever been in a room with 400 people where no one is able, all you can hear is people crying?
Oof. Oh, my God. That's effective when they can... When they can get people to pay attention like that and be moved like that. And
people stood in line to hug her.
Mm.
Mm. Wow. Awful. Here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Elicker show. Jacob, are you going to be participating in that Mariners thing on Friday? I saw that in the big email. We're going to take video and then cheer on the Mariners or something.
Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to ask you if you'll help with that, too.
Yeah, okay, fine. go ahead, ask.
Will you help with that? Will you make it?
Keep getting your information from this Yahoo. He doesn't even know what he's talking about.
All right.
Okay, I can interpret that answer.
When do they want it by?
Thursday. Okay. I don't know why I'm engaging.
I just did that for Sherry.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we know that the Biden administration wants to double the number of IRS agents, they get like 80,000 of them. They want to hire another 80 in the next 10 years. So through attrition and then retirement and stuff like that, they'll never be able to double it, but they're coming. Don't forget, they only want to come after anybody making more than $400,000. So how many is that, John? Well, let me tell you, that's about 3 million. That's about it. About 3 million. 157 million tax returns sent in. So if you are making over $400,000, they say those are the people they're going to be targeting. Those, the three million of you out there making that amount of money. They're only going to come for you. So the reason.com looks at this and says, forget it for one minute. If you believe that the additional IRS agents are not going to be coming for people that are making, say, under $50,000, you're nuts. So get ready. Here comes the federal government looking for more money from you.
So they're upping the IRS budget by about 69%. They're hiring about 87,000 more. They're looking more workers, and they're looking to get about $124 billion in tax revenue. Janet Yellen has sent a letter, to the IRS and saying, you know, please, we are not going to have this new amount of, you know, investment in the IRS increase the chances of those making $400,000 or less increase. So right now, the numbers are, if you make $200,000 or less, the chances of being audited are about 1 out of 400. That's how many people get audited for that. So they're saying that's not what households earning less than $400,000 will likely see the chance of an audit decline. This is what the Treasury said. Instead, new funding will crack down on tax evaders among the wealthy and large corporations, invest in technology upgrades that help taxpayers, and hire more customer support staff to prevent backlogs. That's their objective, according to Treasury.
So you fill out the tax forms and you send it in. It becomes, at a certain point, it's how you interpret that law. So if you have a tax accountant you're working with, there's avoidance and evasion. You can avoid and you can evade. Evading will get you caught and get you, you know, audited, and then you get in trouble. 60 to 90% of the time, the IRS is wrong on their interpretation of the deductions you've taken or your filing. 60 to 90% of the time. So often they will try to get, you know, they'll come after you with a whole bunch of money. We want, you know, X amount of dollars. And a lot of times it's a small percentage they end up getting. A lot of people just cave and they're like, okay, what do we owe? You say we owe $80,000, and then you go back and forth and you're paying to have, because don't forget, you've got your tax attorney sitting there. And at some point the guy's like, look, just write him a check for $25,000 and just move on, you know, because they're going to take some piece of it. But often it's through the interpretation of what the law is. They're assuming that people are out there, you know, intentionally trying to hide this stuff from the government, and that they're not going to go after the low-hanging fruit. There's just not enough of the rich people. If you only have 3 million tax returns for someone's making a gross income of $400,000, you know, there's just not enough people right there. Where, you know, the old idea, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. You got to go down and get the lower parts of it. The people making $50,000 up to $100,000. So even if you make $100,000 or $150,000, you're part of the top 10%. I mean, is that considered rich? $150,000 a year? Your top 10% wage earner, you think that's rich?
No, it's not rich at all, but I think it statistically it's richer than most. So yes, they could potentially go after that. I do know that in terms of manpower, for instance, my parents filed their taxes this year and they got their return, their refund check this week. That's how slow it was. So they didn't e-file. So, I mean, that's part of it. But I mean, the backlog is astronomical in terms of them trying to get to all of these different returns. So I do think an influx of employees is important, but more employees means that, yes, they're going to be taking aim at more taxpayers. No doubt about it.
Yeah. So this idea that, oh, don't worry, we're only going to get the rich people. They're the ones cheating and, you know, you don't have to pay. And you often hear about these people. Well, we can go back to the 1950s when the high tax rate was 90% or 91% was the income tax. Nobody paid it. Yeah, it was 91%, but people had ways around it. You could do this and do that. There was all sorts of legal deductions that you could take. I remember prior to Reagan's tax cut and then the change, I think it was in 84 something, you could own, and my dad did this, you could own a racehorse. And it was he and like 100 other people had this racehorse. It was apparently a horrible horse. And they then were able to get tax deductions based upon this racehorse. And I didn't, I don't know, as a kid, I did, oh, wow, we own a racehorse. And it wasn't until later on I happened to be reading an article about how rich people were taking advantage of by owning racehorses. This weird tax sort of, not loophole, but it was a legal deduction that you could take if you happen to have a horse.
Well, I mean, and there are lots of those. I don't know if that's still in effect, but
it isn't.
You really have to know, you know, the ins and outs, and the wealthy people do know those things, but that doesn't make it illegal. It just makes them, you know, playing by the rules that they happen to know about.
Right.
I mean, and what your dad did wasn't illegal. It was there. It was an opportunity for him to save money and to be able to take a deduction that was available.
Yeah, people are like, oh, it's a loophole. It's not a loophole.
No, it's not. Not if it's on the books.
Right. I'm trying to look it up to see what the how it worked, but you know, I thought it was really cool. All of a sudden, yeah, the benefits of racehorses to you could depreciate the racehorse over 3 years, up to $500,000, and then the tax bill with horse benefits, and the then they got rid of it. Are you maximizing all your deductions and
What was the horse's name?
I don't remember, but probably Loophole or something like that. Who knows? But I don't know how many other people he owned it with. But, you know, you would take
penalty.
every advantage you could on that. I always say to my accountant, Robert, I go, Robert, there's the difference between avoidance and evasion. I want to be right on that line. I mean, right on it, avoidance and evasion. And he is the president of the Washington State Accountants Association. Nice guy, bespectacled. He's got the glasses and the tweed jacket and the Hamilton watch, collector's watch. And he's always like, oh, okay, John, well, you know what? That's questionable. And I'm like, what's questionable? A haircut? I need that for my, that's like part of my performance on stage. We're not going to do that. I said, about Botox? No, unless you get a doctor's prescription. Jeez.
It used to be that you could do that, because I remember being able to write off wardrobe, all this stuff, right? Because you were on camera, so you could do all that. Not so much anymore.
You could try.
You can try. They may not flag it, but you can try.
Sherry's going to try, by the way, IRS.
Okay.
And her Social Security number is 164.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness.
2954.
Is it? Oh, sorry.
2-9-5-4-6-6.
Thank you.
I like how your accountant sounds like Jacob.
He did a little Disney. That's why I like
some
him.
Some similarities.
All right. Thank you, Mickey, for noticing that. All right. Here we go. Big congratulations to Sherry for finding this one. Where'd you find this story? This is But got to be one of the worst political ads. We thought we had one of the worst ones the other day with that grandma, the rapping grandma from Colorado. Mm-hmm. But this is the Republican governor in Michigan.
It's in Michigan, right. It's her name is Tudor Dixon. And I did a little looking into this, and this was not produced by her group. This was produced by a county in Michigan, a GOP, support group or whatever you want to call it. And it's a real biker group. And this was written by a playwright, an English professor. The dialogue was written. It took them about 3 weeks to do it, and they are very proud of it.
Yes. Just imagine, looks like eight people. They're in not a straight line. They kind of curve the line a little bit. Everyone there has got a mustache and beard.
Well, there's a few women in there.
Well,
that's what I said.
Okay.
As I said, and everyone has the, like a bandana on, like they're riding, and they've lots of leather, lots of layers of things. Probably a lot of them have emphysema in a couple of years. So, okay, here we go. You ready? And by the way, yeah. Andrew, do listen to this because these people will be appearing in the Send Us Your Letter song.
Hey, have you seen the TV ads with the governor talking about the great things she's done for Michigan?
She's a liar. Whitmer can say what she wants, but we live here. Just look around, man.
During COVID, Whitmer locked down businesses like the Owosso Barber and put one woman from Holland in jail.
Oh, yeah. 3,000 restaurants closed. And she's pro-business?
Yeah, right.
And what about those higher gas and food prices?
Our schools were closed for almost 2 years. Poor kids.
Speaking of kids, Whitmer says...
By the way, that lady's the worst actress of them all, that lady. Schools got locked down for 2 years. Poor kids.
Like, poor kids.
Poor kids. Okay. So just think, you know, more like, God, poor kids.
Poor kids.
Right. Just if you have your voice go, just think like, oh, poor kids.
Oh,
let's try it again.
Okay. Poor kids.
Okay. I think we got that.
She's going to work like hell to keep killing babies.
And she put COVID patients in Graham's nursing home.
Graham died alone.
You got to stop that. That guy is looking straight down the barrel of the camera as he says, Graham died
in Graham's nursing home. Because we all know Graham.
Well, wait a minute. She put somebody in Graham's nursing home and then Graham died alone. Is Graham the name of the nursing home?
No, Graham's like their friend.
Or grandma. I don't know which. Maybe they're talking about a
patient in Graham's nursing home.
Graham died alone.
Okay. I'm voting for the other chick. What's her name?
Tudor Dixon.
Okay, let's roll.
Watch out for potholes. Whitmer never kept her promise to
fix the damn roads.
Again, an English professor and playwright. And it took them 3 weeks to produce it. He wrote it 3 weeks.
Got it. Oh, by the way, someone just wrote in, Rapping Grandma is Utah. You're right. Sorry. And I sent Jacob another one, horrible one, of a guy swimming. Comes out of the water without a shirt on, obviously, because he's swimming. And then he just starts yelling about, and I'm not going to spend any more money on strippers.
Okay.
And that's a promise.
Was he the candidate?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, why he walks up to the, there's a woman speaking, and then he walks up to the camera coming up out of the water. And he's got his bathing suit on, and then he does the ad, just standing there, and then that's where he's like, and I promise I'm not going to spend any more money on strippers.
We can all get behind that.
Yeah.
Were these parodies?
He's going to lose the stripper vote. He's going to lose the stripper vote.
Poor strippers. Right. No. Or however you say, deliver
poor
that
strippers.
Line.
Poor strippers.
He was their biggest tipper.